It is twilight. The stadium is now empty. Only the wind whistles through the enormous cavern known as Michigan Stadium. The voices of 100,000 roaring fanatical onlookers have been silenced, rumbling off in echoes. Memories are recalled since the roar of the first spectators cheered the exploits of Benny Ustaban and Laverne Taylor. Now, 21 million fans later, it is quiet again. Saturdays to come, the chants and battle cries will be heard. The frenzied clamor of the crowd will spur on the maize and blue of Michigan. But now in the early evening, as the sun nestles behind the western wall of this amphitheater, all is still. It is as it should be, and there is a feeling that prevails as I stand on the midfield stripe in this empty stadium that the spirit of the past is present. Though the stands are empty, my imagination is stirred by what has happened on Saturday afternoons in the long ago. And echoing with the wind, I can hear the crack of padding, the grunts, the moans, the shuddering of brute force against brute force, and the swell of thunder that sweeps the field. But now it is still, and that is how it should be. For in the stillness, I hear a voice, clear and crisp, exuberant and excited, echoing down from the press box high above. It is a voice that is synonymous with all the glory and agony, all the triumph and defeat that has been witnessed on this 88,000 square foot area situated in a Midwestern American town, Ann Arbor, Michigan. For 363 games, this voice was heard, chanting and cheering, cajoling, chastising, caterwauling, urging the maize and blue of his general Beau to do what was expected, and then do the impossible. He was the only broadcaster I ever knew who was also a team's number one fan, its drum major, its most indefatigable cheerleader, its honorary coach. He was this all wrapped up in one. And as I stand here this evening, now the wind subsiding and the cold of early evening setting in, the voice comes alive. And I have been thrust back into yesterday.
84 seconds remaining in the first half. The digital scoreboard show Michigan zip, Ohio State 3. But, and it's a big but right now, Michigan has the ball on the Buckeye 1 yard line. And the Wolverines, as they have so many times in their glorious 98-year history, are coming from behind the Buckeyes once again. Can they do it? We'll know in a matter of seconds. Up over the ball comes Walt Downey. Two tight ends in a balanced line. Ricky Leach under center at quarterback. Wide out to the right is White. It's Smitty deep and Davis close. Here comes White in motion across formation. Ricky Leach under center gives to Rosie Smith. And he's down! Roosevelt Smith! Little Roosevelt Smith picks up touchdown number 4 of the 1977 season. His first of the afternoon. Roosevelt Smith moves into the end zone. The Cass Tech High School lad of 2 years ago comes through for the maize and blue. Buford, you better settle down. You aren't going to have anything left for the second half. Rosie Smith deep, Davis close, 3rd and 2 on the Buckeye, 1.5 yard line. There goes White in motion. Ricky Leach rolls to the right. He cuts back in. He's going in, and he does. He scores. Ricky Leach scores. He scores his 51st touchdown of his career. Look at the tissue paper. I couldn't call it toilet paper over the air. That wouldn't be cricket. But all of the maize and blue festive situations that ever existed in the past are raining down on Canham's carpet now. Well, I tell you, old Bo George Patton Schembechler is going to stay on the ground now. There is no way Michigan will not come out the winner here this afternoon. And there it is. That's all there is. There isn't any more. I don't want you to ever forget today. The crowd is going to go bananas here in just about 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 second. Listen to 106,000 fans, and don't ever forget with the final score, Michigan 14, Ohio State 6.
That voice has now joined the others, which have been stilled. For as we all learned, Bob Ufer has passed on following a spirited and arduous battle against cancer. On this program, we should like to offer this tribute to the man, not in the light of his broadcasting and business accomplishments, but rather because he meant so much to the state of Michigan in which he lived, and also, too, because he meant a great deal to us at WJR. For me, this is a rather difficult undertaking, because in all candidness, I did not know the man that well. But sometimes a tribute of this nature can be more effectively presented, less emotionally contrived, if that person who offers the eulogy is not constrained by a heart wrenched with sadness over the passing of a dear friend. And though I did not know him well, having been in his company infrequently, I knew him by reputation. I knew what others knew, what others had said, what others felt. I knew what millions of radio listeners had come to know. I discovered what the young people had come to recognize, that here was a man who practiced a very simple formula, a very simple formula for living, as he had proven that it was successful as well. He called it SSE, simplicity, sincerity, and enthusiasm. And he made it work. It worked in his private life, with his wife and seven children, in his insurance business, and it worked in his broadcasting profession. And so on this program, this WJR tribute, I would rather turn to his formula and leave the tears for those who wish to find sanctuary in this expression. This tribute will be simple, sincere, and enthusiastic. For this is the way I think he would have wanted it. You know, it is quite comfortable and somewhat expected to hear the familiar old hymns and the solemnity of the church organ when we bid farewell to friends and loved ones. I don't believe Bob Ufer would have wanted it this way. He probably would have said, "Don't play any funeral dirges when I go. You know what I want to hear."
Thank you.
So this, ladies and gentlemen, sport fans and Michigan supporters, is how we'll say goodbye to Bob Ufer. The band will strike up one more time. The stadium is again alive with a rush and roar of 100,000 strong. The blue and maize winged helmets are on the field, and the tempo quickens, the pulse begins to beat, the throbbing of excitement now generates itself through the stadium. And from the press box, re-echoing in the speakers of thousands of transistor radios.
Fly to the right is Carter. Fly to the left comes Mitchell. It'll be third down and 10 from the 40-yard line. Wolfolk deep and Ingram close. Wangler's back. He gives off to Wolfolk. He's down over the 30. Down the 25, the 20, the 15, the 10, the 5, 4, 3. He stops the clock at the 4-yard line. Wolfolk fumbled earlier, but by God, he recovered himself. He broke four tackles between the 30 and the Notre Dame 4-yard line. Look at that Michigan bench. Listen to old man Ufer. Bob, you got to get back.
I'll never forget my college days. Those dear, sincere old college days. I'll never forget my name.
36 years ago, 364 games. It all began for Bob Ufer in 1945. This unbelievable love affair that he had with the U of M. To millions of sport fans, Bob Ufer was the voice of the Wolverines, and since the end of World War II, there were 8 Rose Bowl games, 1 Orange Bowl, and 1 Gator Bowl. His interest in football went back to his college years, when he was a Wolverine himself during his freshman year. He also ran track, which became his principal sport for the remainder of his college years. The past, perhaps, can best be described in this recorded anecdote.
Moses, we have a moment or so right now. Maybe you'd like to know where the Michigan came from. Well, it all started some 77 years ago when a man came from the West Coast to the University of Michigan by the name of Fielding H. Jost. And over the following 40 years, he put together the greatest athletic program in the history of Big Ten athletics in general, and Big Ten football in particular. Why, early in the 1940s, in the twilight years of the late and great Fielding H. Jost, I happened to be an undergraduate student at Michigan and was a member of the university track team. And during the winter months in those days, one could almost always find Coach Jost on any afternoon sitting on that old wooden bench at the north end of Jost Fieldhouse. And in between time trials and track, we on the track team would all sit around there with the old coach. I can see Jost now with that old felt hat on, chewing on his famous cigar, reminiscing and talking on endlessly about his Michigan and the dreams that he'd hoped for and realized for his wonderful university. Coach Jost originally came from West Virginia, and he had a decided southern drawl and accent. Thus, Jost always referred to his Michigan instead of Michigan. So down through the years on these Michigan football broadcasts, we kind of figured that if Fielding H. Jost could talk about his Michigan, there wasn't anything wrong with old Bob Ufer referring to it in that way, especially at a time when Michigan was exhibiting everything that Jost ever stood for.
Bob Ufer was really quite good at track, as he set all-time varsity records, and to his credit was a world quarter-mile record. Bob Ufer was a winner. In recognition of his achievements, he was named a charter member of the U of M's Athletic Hall of Honor just 3 years ago. Sports is a way of life for me, Ufer would say. In addition to football and track in college, he coached high school basketball, golf, football, and little league baseball teams. But it was really broadcasting that became his great love. in bringing his play-by-play style to the Wolverine football games to millions of listeners every Saturday afternoon. He brought a unique approach to the art of sportscasting. It was a controversial style that was Bob Uecker's, and yet, as pointed out by sportscaster Dale Conquest of WJR, it really went a good deal deeper than simply a man and his job.
It was 5 years ago that I came to Detroit, and the first time I heard Bob Uecker, my first thought is, this guy for real? And when you get right down to it, that's what he is, and that's why he was so successful at what he did, because he was for real, and people knew he was for real, and they knew it wasn't a game or an act, and the cheering and the so many games to the Rose Bowl and the this and that and all the things, the comparisons to World War II and so on that he did, but it was all for real, and that's how he got away with it. Had it been phony or fake, it wouldn't have worked, and he'd have been in trouble from the beginning. A game that Michigan lost this year to Iowa, 9-7, during the halftime, they paid tribute to Bob, who'd come back to the booth, and they spelled out his name on the field and all that and saluted him. He got on the PA system, and I'm sitting up in the press box, and you can look down, and everybody on the same side of the field with the press box starts turning around to listen to every word that Bob Uecker has to say. And they applaud, and he's giving a cheerleading session for the Wolverines is what he's doing. We're going to come back. We're going to get this. We're going to go to Pasadena. And the entire, just a sea of one half of the stands turning around to see him and to try and find him, because they wanted to listen to his words and they wanted to know more about him. I don't know if I can define it the way I want to, because he was something that people knew where he was coming. He was a cheerleader in the press box, and he knew it, and everybody knew it, and that's the way it was. The pep rallies that he entertained out at the Rose Bowl when they were in Pasadena, the squad responded to him amazingly well. Everybody seemed to respond to him out there. He was a cheerleader, a man who truly loved the University of Michigan and its sports programs, and everybody knew that there was not a fake bone in his body. It was all for real, and he was coming from the heart. He was honest, and in return, they were honest with him.
You're going to win that ball game tomorrow.
No, sir, I don't believe he made it, and Michigan held! Michigan held! They held at the 6-yard line! McCartney's monsters did it!
You're going to win it for Bo. You're going to win it for Michigan.
Butch cuts back in and he's down to the 4-3-2.
Well, Bo picks up his first touchdown in this Rose Bowl game.
You're going to win it for the team with the winningest tradition in the history of Big Ten football.
Play action pass is thrown over the middle.
God, this has got sick and amazing for Michigan heart.
And you know, most of all, you're going to win it for yourself. You're going to prove to yourself that Notre Dame and South Carolina were flukes.
He's going to give it to Edwards again. Edwards does it, I think. Edwards completes the vendetta.
You are indeed the finest football team in America today.
5-4-3-2-1. That's all there is. There isn't any more. And the final score again, Michigan 23, Washington 6.
As so often is the case, most of us have a tendency to take things for granted. How many times have we wished for the opportunity to tell others how we feel, a second chance to convey expressions of thanks, respect, admiration, gratitude to all those who have affected our lives? Bob Uecker, in his own special way, affected each of us. If you're a Wolverine fan, he had a way of stimulating, exciting, sending us into a high-spirited frenzy. And fortunately, fate was to deal Bob Uecker a generous hand of love. on the afternoon of October 17th, 1981.
On the field, the stands are all, well, they're full of standing spectators. Up, looking up to the press box to see Bob Buford. There's a great cheer for Bob as he acknowledges it. He's down in the public address booth, away from our booth. And he's going to ask the folks now to sing with vigor the victors. Let's listen once again. We hope you can hear it.
I'm so highly honored. I want you to know that what I've done through the years has been a labor of love. And right now, I would like to God bless each and every one of your cotton-picking maize and blue.
Like this, where 105,000 fans have stood up and singled out a Michigan man like Bob Buford and pay him homage.
He's loved this university and this football team so much, and it's so great. I love seeing all these people return his love. I think it's just beautiful.
I'm so happy you could join us. I know that you and Bo count Bob Buford among your close, very close friends.
Yes, we are.
Thanks for joining us. We have to hurry now so our stations can get her out to the business of some messages and some news.
The Iowa-Michigan game would be one of his last, and those that knew him knew that it wasn't the same driving, colorful, zesty Bob Buford. Gone was the fever pitch always generated by this fiery announcer, and though the spirit was willing, the physical endurance just wasn't there. It had been a return to the trenches for Bob. His consecutive streak had been broken on September 12, 1981, when he decided he couldn't make it all the way in the Michigan against Wisconsin game. 20 minutes before game time on that Saturday afternoon, he apologized and said there wasn't any way after 36 years of doing Michigan games that he could sit in the booth and watch somebody else do the game. It was too frustrating for him. After a minute or two profiling the game, he turned to the man sitting next to him and said, "And now, I turn the microphone over to Frank Beckman over this Michigan Football Network." To come, the autumn winds will howl across the field, the sun will peek its head from behind a woolly cloud, and gathered on tomorrow, Saturdays, will be the gladiatorial combat known as football. Here, set in an average town like so many others in America, is the concrete fortress where thousands gather and urge with deafening roar the stalwart heroes, knights of the maize and blue. For 60 minutes, their emotions will rise and fall, controlled by the exploits of the legions on the field, The jubilation is the hometown halfback dodges and spins, sidesteps and now heads for an open field. The groan of disappointment as the ball is kicked up, up, and the point after is missed. A game controlled by time, and the battering, ramming, pushing, tackling as offense meets defense. A contest determined by the ticking of a clock as football spirals through the air like distorted arrows. And on the sidelines, generals planning strategy, coaching, admonishing, encouraging, rising to the occasion at the urging of 100,000 strong. On other Saturday afternoons, there will be other sports announcers sitting where Bob Ufer sat. Their degree of expertise will vary. Some may or may not be as good as Bob. For after Bob Ufer, they broke the mold. You'll speak of gray October afternoons, of marching bands, and exhilarating moments on the field. But there will be no Uferisms. There'll be no color, no laughter. But Bob Ufer made football fun for us all. Gone is the delirious excitement. Gone is the one-man cheering section, the articulate, colorful, unabashed partisan, and his approach to U of M football. But here in the empty stadium, on this cold October evening, the spirit of what Bob Ufer meant to people lives. It's a vital and alive thing. It's just as though he were here. Perhaps that character, that personality, can be best summed up by the director of athletics at the University of Michigan. Here's Mr. Don Canham.
Well, Mike, I think his great charm is, you know, the boyhood enthusiasm. And I think most people feel that a fellow like that is lucky to have something in life that, you know, consumes him. And I think, I was on the track team with Bob when we were both in school, and he's always been that way. He was an honest guy, you know, and everybody that comes through, he wears his emotions on his sleeve, and people admire people like that. I think also he's extremely articulate and can paint a word picture like you do in a different world. Like no one I've ever seen. He can build a drama at a football game that makes you feel like you're on the sidelines. And I think that great enthusiasm, a tremendous honesty, and the ability to paint a word picture endeared him to so many people who never met him. And they felt by listening to him they could understand the kind of person he was, and you could. He was just the way he seemed to be. A wonderful guy. There's no question he was a great family man and raised and educated, tons of children, frankly. And he was that way with the athletes. At the football game a week or so ago, they had a tribute to him, the students, and he just rocked the stadium when he got on the PA system. Mm-hmm. He had the ability to get close to a lot of people. He had friends in every walk of life, and he was very close to young people, particularly our athletes. He could relate to them.
Yeah.
And I guess it's, you know, I go back to that boyhood enthusiasm for a man in his 60s. I knew very few people like that. Woody Hayes was one who maintained his enthusiasm until he was, you know, late 60s. And I think that you can't fool young people. They know when you're sincere. And he would talk to the team at, I remember before the Rose Bowl last year, he talked to the team, and, man, they'd run through the wall after he got through talking because they knew he believed what he was saying. He was not, an interesting thing, Mike, he didn't have a phony bone in his body. He couldn't lie. I never heard him lie. He couldn't cheat anybody, and he was constantly worrying that he'd offended someone. And when he used to get letters when he first started on JR, he was so different, as you know, and so unique that he got a lot of personal letters, and some of them, as you say, didn't like the way he did things. He used to bring them in and sit down and say, read this. I'd say, you throw that damn thing away. And but he was so sensitive because he didn't want to offend people that it was a unique situation.
Yeah. Perhaps some of the feeling of the people can be best expressed in some of those letters Don Canham alluded to. And I should like to read one for you on this evening's presentation in our tribute to Bob Ufer, written to this radio station, December 20th in the year of 1977. Dear Mr. Ufer, I sincerely hope this letter reaches you, as I am writing it to congratulate you for what I feel is a job extremely well done, your broadcasting of the University of Michigan football games. I have recently had the pleasure to hear the album of recorded excerpts from your play-by-play broadcasts over the last several years, and even recorded it for the benefit of my friends here in Columbus. Being an OSU graduate and a devout fan of the university's athletic teams and coaches, your harsh criticisms and attacks on Coach Woody Hayes upset me somewhat. However, I've become used to hearing and reading such points of view and attribute them in part to the fact that very few people recognize or understand the total dedication with which Coach Hayes approaches his job. And to this, his love and support of the athletes who play on his football team and the university itself. And I think it offers an explanation, if not an excuse, for some of his more radical actions and reactions. But this is a digression from the point of this letter. I have for some time considered myself a critic of play-by-play announcers of various sports. Granted, I've considered some broadcasters who are relatively obscure in the profession to be very good and dislike the performance of some of the household names with six-figure network salaries. My observance encompasses both national figures and local ones from many areas, and I've come to two distinct conclusions. First, I enjoy and admire a partial broadcaster, even a cheerleader, if I feel he is sincere and accurate in his reporting, and does not hesitate to give credit to the people on the wrong sideline, if such praise is justified. And second, I think you personify this type of reporter, and I honestly envy the University of Michigan for having you as part of its football tradition. Perhaps at 30, I am mellowing a little bit. Perhaps I have grown more tired than I realize of listening to local announcers describe an Ohio State football game, in my opinion, the greatest spectacle in all of sport, with all the excitement and enthusiasm of a Greyhound trip to Pittsburgh. Whatever the reason, I can actually thrill to the emotional ecstasy in your voice when Michigan makes a big play, yes, sometimes even against Ohio State, and sympathize with the emotional disaster you verbalize at times, such as the heart-rendering missed field goals at Purdue in 1976 and down here in 1974. Michigan football must mean a very great deal to you for you to be able to get it across to an anti-Michigan man like me. I would surrender almost anything short of a victory over the Blue and Maize to have Bob Ufer broadcasting Ohio State football. Mr. Ufer, I wish you well in the continuation of your career. You do more than a fitting justice to the excitement and spectacle of college football and to its greatest game, Ohio State, Michigan, and your love for your subject and your work is coming through loud and clear. Although I would be quite happy if you never again have what must be the supreme pleasure of reporting a Michigan victory over Ohio State, I must confess one thing. My very next rendition of We Don't Give a Damn for the Whole State of Michigan and Everyone Thereafter have to include the parenthetical line, except for Bob Ufer. Thank you and good luck. Sincerely, Jack Ponsler.
I'm going to take off the hat of Bob. Hugh for the Voice of Michigan football. And I'm going to put on the hat of Bob Hugh for the NBA. And I'm going to talk to another group of NBA, these Michigan players, and a fine group of football athletes. They've done it all down through the years. And I guess you guys know that this old reporter, I love this great University of Michigan. I love football, and I think you guys are something special. You know why? Because to me, you exemplify what Michigan athletes and Michigan athletes are about. You not only have class, but you have met adversity individually, and met adversity and conquered it, so that you could be out and play on this great 1980 football team. And as a team, you come together with a cohesiveness, a strength core, and you were overcome adversities, a lot of them. And you won a championship that everybody said you couldn't do. And you know what you're going to do tomorrow? You're going to give the finest coach in America his first bowl game. That's what you're going to do tomorrow. You're going to win it for the Sagan Prestige of the Big Ten. You're also going to win it for the school that has the largest living alumni body in the world, over 300,000 of them, and they're all going to be behind you tomorrow. And you know, most of all, you're going to win it for yourselves. You're going to prove to yourselves that Notre Dame and South Carolina were flukes. And when you walk out of that stadium tomorrow afternoon with victory ringing in your ears, you're going to know that you could have been 12-0 in the season. And better yet, you're going to know down deep because you will have just shown 45 million on TV along with 100,000 over there that you are indeed the finest football team in America today. Fellas, I ask you from this point on, think victory, beat Washington. You've got 60 minutes of football and a lifetime to remember. And believe me, you will remember tomorrow's game as long as you.
In the next few days, you'll hear many eulogies, many heartfelt expressions of what we thought of Bob Eufer. Perhaps best summarized by U of M coach Bo Schembechler.
Bob was a special kind of friend because I don't believe I've ever met anyone who was so dedicated to a school or a football program as Bob was. And he loved everything about the university, and he and I were very close, but he'd have been close with whoever was coaching Michigan football because he loved it so much. And so our relationship was very, very close, and I can tell you that all of us around here are going to miss him because he's many of the people out there that just know him from his voice in announcing Michigan football games. Probably never realized that he was exactly the same kind of person off the radio as he was on. He was he's a great family man, an honest, sincere guy, and he was just a joy to be around because he had such a great personality, and we were going to miss him a great deal around here.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that stands out about Bob Eufer, Bo, is that some people, when they first heard him on WJR, for instance, said, oh, what kind of act is this? You know, he's a phony. But he wasn't. It was all very real.
No, he let everybody know at the outset that he was completely biased. I mean, he was Michigan through and through, and that's what made him unique, really, because, you know, in your business, most sportscasters have to be a little bit unbiased in their reporting of the events, but Bob was never that way. And it was always, whatever happened on the field was always pro-Michigan. I mean, because he was, along with most of the people that listened, was rooting for us. He wanted us to win. And it was a unique approach. And I know you, along with a lot of others, when he went to WJR, and, you know, such a large station and so many listening to the games, that, you know, this is kind of a gamble that a guy who was as pro-Michigan as he was would be announcing the games. But I think people, even the people that were on the opposition side, marveled at him. And I know I've had many coaches tell me, say, Bo, gee, I wish we had a guy like Bob Eufer announcing our games.
Well, I think a lot of people just wish they had a man like Bob Eufer in their life because he gave so freely of himself, and that's the thing people didn't realize. To charities, if a player or a coach needed help in any way, Bob was there to always lend the hand.
Up until the time that he got sick, if anyone called him for any charitable cause or anyone wrote to him, he would answer. He just felt obligated, whether it's a hospital to visit or some kind of a charity banquet or whatever it was. He would give of himself at any time. And he was just that kind of a guy. And, you know, when you lose a friend like that, it's not easy. There's going to be something missing in Michigan football without him. But one thing they can't take away from us is all the great memories of his broadcasting Michigan games. And, you know, nobody could do it with more enthusiasm than he did.
Most people agree that since 1969, when Bo Schembechler came to Michigan, never has more attention been given to the maize in blue. And there's a man who played an instrumental part in every one of those U of M football games. In fact, he's been a part of the football tradition at the University of Michigan for the past 33 years. Each Saturday afternoon, faithfully at game time, his voice colorfully describes the gridiron action over the Michigan Football Network. He's as much a part of Ann Arbor as dormitories, State Street, final exams, the art fair, tailgate picnics, and the Michigan football stadium itself. He is the voice of Michigan football. When former President Gerald R. Ford visited Ann Arbor in September 76, he asked this man to act as master of ceremonies at an unforgettable rally in Chrysler Arena.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Chrysler's Cathedral, or Cassie's Castle, or better yet, the home of the number one football team in the country right now.
The man's name is Bob Euchre.
The home of the winningest college football team in the country over the last 7 years. You know, the run 'em through the core of all Michigan activities, both on and off this campus, a certain intangible thing. We call it the great Michigan spirit. Maybe you can relate to it if I tell you it's that atmosphere that permeates that stadium out there every Saturday afternoon in the fall when over 100,000 fans patiently wait to see whether Bo Schembechler's going to continue his winning ways. You know what I mean. You can feel the excitement, the tension, the charisma that surrounds that stadium every Saturday afternoon, especially 10 to 14 minutes before kickoff, when a hush settles over that stadium and we all anxiously wait for that simple four-word command to emanate out of the PA system. I can hear it now. Band, take the field. And out of that eastern tunnel pour 215 well-drilled, well-disciplined Michigan bandsmen. They pour over the eastern sideline. They form the big block M, and they play the greatest college fight song ever written, the Michigan Victors. That's when the chills go up and down your spine. You get goose pimples all over. Your blood turns maize and blue. And everybody out there becomes part of the winningest tradition in the history of Big Ten football, as well as the winningest tradition in the history of Big Ten athletics.
Yes, Bo Schembechler and J.P. McCarthy said it best. The voice of Michigan for all time, exemplifying all that is best about the nature of man, the willingness to vie for a fair victory, the courage to stand by and defeat, the little boy in all of us, exuberant, happy, laughing, possessing a twinkle in the eye, a mischievous element that always, next week, it would all begin again. Bob Euchre has called his last game, scored his last touchdown. The game he loved in life will be with him always. For you see, even for him, there is next week. looking down from where he is and gazing on the crowd. With banners flying briskly, the victors playing loud, the maize and blue charge on the field, led by General Beau. And I'm sure that if we heard him speak, he'd want us all to know. The glories of our yesterdays have faded in the past. It's now another Saturday. It's now a different cast. And don't forget that I am here above to spur you on, for death will not extinguish my everlasting bond that I have had for Michigan since I was just a lad. No tears for me, no eulogy, no poems morose and sad. For I am out here watching, and the old excitement's there. I see Smith fading back, the ball is in the air. So you can see that all is well. And don't you grieve for me. Just love the game, the maize and blue, and get the victory. And if in idle moments is the thought of me so near, just sing a chorus of that old song. You know the one I want to hear. My thanks to Dale Conquest, J.P. McCarthy, Athletic Director Don Canham, and Head Coach Beau Schembechler, and the WJR Sports Department for their participation in tonight's special tribute to Bob Ufer. This is Mike Worf speaking.
This special tribute to Bob Ufer was written, produced, and narrated by Mike Worf. Copyright on this program is held by radio station WJR and cannot be reproduced without the express written consent of WJR Radio, Detroit.